Welcome to the Master Your Meetings teleseminar series, brought to you by robertsrulesmadesimple.com.
Greetings and welcome to the Master Your Meetings teleseminar series. I am your host, Susan Leahy from robertsrulesmadesimple.com. This is our fourth call in our six-part series, and today we're going to be talking about agendas and minutes, a step-by-step process for getting these documents working for you. You know, as I was thinking about today, I really felt compelled to share with you a little equation. Now, I know that I can't hear all of you, but what I want you to do is just kind of humor me, because I want you to kind of start by mentally noting the first thing that comes to mind after I share this little equation. Okay, so here we go. So just kind of think about the first thing that pops into your mind. All right, time equals what? Time equals what? And, you know, I got to tell you, 99.99% of the time when I do this, when I kind of throw this equation out, people inevitably end up yelling that time equals money. And while there may be a lot of truth to that, and it may be what most of us have been trained to believe, I want you to maybe think about this equation a little bit differently. You see, time equals something so much more important. Time equals life. Now, why am I sharing this with you, you might be asking? And well, that's, you know, I'm sharing this with you because this is how I start many of my presentations. I want my clients to realize that there is a bigger reason to improve the effectiveness of your meetings. You know, it has to become almost, you know, it's almost become normal to hear people say things like, you know, that meeting was just the biggest waste of time. You know, and that's almost an expected sentence. But this teleseminar series, I really hope, is about transforming your boards. We are here because we know that you do not have any life to waste. You know, maybe I'm so passionate about this stuff because I think in some small way I'm helping to save people's lives. You know, I bring this equation to you because time equals life. And I find that many boards are wasting a whole lot of life when it comes to how they're using their agendas and their minutes. You know, so I'm hoping that today we're going to give you some insights and tips that will help your meetings really be more productive so you can start saving each other's lives a little bit. Now, before I introduce our guest speaker today, I would like to welcome all of you who've been participating in the Master Your Meetings teleseminar series. We've had many of you who've been on the call since the beginning and have been participating via the internet. So those of you who are all listening online, I'm waving to you right now. Thank you for listening to us over the internet. We're glad to have you listening. Those of you who've actually called in and are participating over the phone, I'm going to real quickly unmute the line because I do sincerely love to hear your voice. So on the count of three, I'm going to unmute the line, and I'd like you to just real quickly just kind of yell out the city where you're calling from. So on the count of three, here we go. One, two, three, let me hear your voice.
Old Beach, Oregon.
I know we got more of you out there. Let me hear where you're from.
Oh, the only person usually.
Salinas. All right. Well, welcome, welcome. And again, I am Susan Leahy from robertsrulesmadesimple.com, and we are talking with Mr. Lorenzo R. Cuesta, PRP, from roberts-rules.com, who's going to be shedding some light on agendas and minutes, a step-by-step process for getting these documents really working for you and your organization. We're excited to have Lorenzo speak with us today about this topic, as it really does seem to be a sticking point for many organizations. Let me real quickly share with you a little about Lorenzo. Mr. Cuesta is a professional registered parliamentarian. That's a PRP. He has been serving associations for almost 10 years as a parliamentarian, as a presenter of interactive workshops, and as a presiding officer. He has been the editor of the California State Association Parliamentarian Quarterly, the California Parliamentarian for 3 years, and he's published parliamentary articles in the official quarterlies of both parliamentary national associations. His parliamentary website, roberts-rules.com, brings him in contact with individuals throughout the U.S. who really start out with a question, and then that question turns into a cooperative relationship. His email, and I will repeat this a little bit later, is parliamentarian AM at roberts-rules.com. This email really has served this purpose for more than 10 years. And Lorenzo really believes that the greatest impact a parliamentarian makes is as an educator. I love this about Lorenzo. It is about being an educator. You know, he has witnessed how some of his associations have really improved drastically after his delegates have really participated in frequent interactive workshops. It's those associations dedicated to really training their members so that meeting management really becomes surprisingly swift and, well, thankfully, a productive process. You know, he's here to talk to us today about agendas and minutes. Mr. Lorenzo Cuesta. Lorenzo, are you there?
Yes. Good morning, Susan. How are you, ma'am?
I'm doing very well, and I am so excited to have you on the Master Your Meetings teleseminar series.
Great. So am I.
Yeah, so we're gonna actually just jump right into the interview, and I think it's important. You know, you've got a really challenging topic because you're actually kind of talking about two things. You're talking about agendas and minutes, and a lot of times those two things are lumped together. But I'm going to just kind of start by asking you to kind of give the purpose of each. So what is the purpose of an agenda?
Very good. The agenda is the order in which business is taken up in a session. It evolves from a previous monthly meeting, and it affects subsequent monthly meetings. But in reality, members should think of the agenda as the arena where the individual's rights collide with the rights of the association. That means that the individual needs to be properly armed with parliamentary procedure in order to use parliamentary procedure as a shield to protect his interest or as a sword to promote his interest. So this is a critical document. On the other hand, minutes are a permanent historical record of the proceedings of an organization, and there's a great deal we can say about both.
Yeah, so very important. I mean, and I like what you're saying, that the purpose of the minutes are really to provide a historical document of what's taken place. And the agenda, very interesting description that you were giving with respect to it really is kind of the shield. Can you speak a little bit more about that?
Well, in most cases, many members think that all they have to do is learn a couple of items from parliamentary procedure and go in there, get in the way, and prevent things from happening to them. But in reality, one needs to be very knowledgeable about the fact that during certain situations, certain aspects of parliamentary procedure will protect the members' rights.
Mm-hmm.
And in other situations, the very same thing could be used to promote the members' rights. And without these, one is just a bystander, and everybody else just tramples all over the members' rights.
Yeah. And I think that's an important thing. It's protecting and promoting the rights of the individuals in the room so that you can have a productive meeting.
Precisely.
Yeah. And I do want to hand out all or just kind of call out that everyone that's listening right now and those who are going to be listening in future recordings, Lorenzo did such an amazing job with respect to he has handouts that he's posted at his website, roberts-rules.com, and I suggest that all of you after this interview, please go and make copies of that. I have the copy sitting in front of me. But real quickly, I know we're going to refer to some of those handouts. Do you want to just give me a real kind of high-level overview of the handouts that people can expect to receive from your website, roberts-rules.com?
Yes, thank you, Susan. In most of these situations, I end up having to repeat this information to all the folks that I deal with. So the very first one is a sample of an agenda. And I promise you, that will answer many questions you have just by looking at what is there and what is not.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's an agenda chart. You can ignore this one until you have a free minute and read through it, because it shows how a motion evolves from one monthly meeting to the next. When you have time to look at this carefully, it's great. Then there's a sample of minutes. Again, the great part is it shows what belongs in it and what doesn't. But the one that I'm proud of the most is a list of do's and a list of don'ts for minutes, because most people get in trouble because they're not aware of this. So if they have an opportunity to look through these slowly, they'll be surprised how merely that, these four items, will improve their meetings tremendously.
And again, all of these handouts, all four of these handouts can be seen at your website, roberts-rules.com. Make sure that you click on them and print them out. I think they're great documents to have, and I appreciate you going out of your way to put those up for everybody.
My pleasure.
Yeah. Real quick question is that, I've been in many meetings where it almost takes the entire meeting to pass the minutes. Has that been something you've experienced?
Every single time. Because most people think that minutes are supposed to be a court transcript of everything everyone said. Well, at the next meeting, when you have to adopt the minutes, everyone changes their mind, or they forgot, or they were misquoted, and you can't get out of that. So the best thing to do is, as the minutes are required, don't talk about opinions or quotations or anything anyone said. So that's definitely one of the biggest problems.
I think it was Jim Stewart who said something to me. He said, remember that they're minutes, not seconds.
Yes, exactly.
I thought that was such a genius quote. And so many times people try to dictate every single thing that's going on in the meeting, and the minutes just become so agonizing. And really, so what should be recorded in the minutes?
I hate to take the short answer for this, and that is, if you go to the handout on the agenda, mm-hmm. on my website, pardon me, you'll see the agenda sample mm-hmm. and the minute sample. And if you look carefully through every item, you start looking at your situation as a club member, board member, and start realizing, I've been leaving this out, or I should not have been including this. Mm-hmm. And so that's a better answer.
Yeah. Well, let's do this, because I know that people don't have that handout in front of them. Let's just real quickly go through the headers as you have them listed in the minutes. So let's just kind of stay connected to the minutes right now. What are the headers that people will find in the sample minutes that you put in there?
Okay. The surprising thing, and what people don't want to convince themselves, is that the headers on the agenda should be the same headers as in the minutes, because mm-hmm. one reflects the other. So in the agenda, as in the minutes, you should have a place for the approval of the minutes, to listen to the officers' reports, to listen to the committee reports, special orders, unfinished business, general orders, and new business. And they're the same in the agenda as they are in the minutes.
Yeah, and it's sometimes I feel like those who are recording the minutes feel like they're starting with a blank piece of paper. But I really think that's it might be obvious to some, but I don't think it's obvious to all, that really your minutes are just a reflection of the agenda, and you use your agenda as the way to fill in your minutes.
Exactly, exactly. The worst thing you can do about taking minutes is you go on the Internet and you get a template from the Internet and start using that. Instead, you should stick to your agenda and just do the minutes the mm-hmm. same way the meeting was organized, and it'll be fine. There is a reason why Robert sets these up, because this sequence is clearly much more advantageous than anything else, I assure you. And I don't care where you find it on the Internet, Robert is still the best offer.
Yeah, absolutely. And I see what you have. It's like the opening, the officer reports, the standing committees, the special committee reports, the unfinished business. Flipping on to the next page, there's new business, there's announcements, programs, adjournments, and then any validations, which those are the signatures that need to be had. So
exactly.
I think that this handout really does a great job of giving a good overview of what, the process for writing your minutes.
Thank you. Yes.
Yeah. Now, I want to, staying on the topic of minutes, there was a question that was sent in, and it's kind of a long question, so I'm going to kind of go through it, and if you can kind of answer it afterwards. But it says, this is an individual who said that, I'm the secretary of an organization that would like to know what to say when presenting the minutes for approval. And then they go on to say that there's been lots of a debate about how to do that, and they give some examples of, quote-unquote, the January minutes are on the table before you. If there are no corrections, I move to approve the January minutes, and then the chairwoman of the organization tells me that I don't have to do that. So she thinks that she's supposed to submit the motion. And so let's just pause and let's see, if I'm the secretary, walk me through exactly what I have to do in order to get those minutes approved.
Okay, let's say you're the secretary and I'm the chair. Since you already created the minutes and you spend a lot of time doing it correctly, you and I have set it up so that the minutes are already distributed, maybe at the desk of chairs where the members are seated. Then you don't do anything after that. I, as a chair, merely say, the minutes are before you, are there any corrections? And count mm-hmm. 3 or 4 seconds, and then immediately say, since there are no corrections, if there's no objections, the minutes will be approved as distributed. If there are corrections, you say, Are there any more corrections? If not, the minutes were approved as corrected. But you really shouldn't, as a secretary, be handling any motions, and neither should the chair. It should be those five magic words, if there is no objection. You can do a lot of business with those five magic words. You don't need a motion.
Let's just, for our listeners, what is that? Those five magic words that you're talking about, really, what is that called in Roberts?
Roberts likes to take care of business very effectively, very productively, very swiftly. And the way to do that is don't waste time on routine, non-controversial issues. If it's obvious they're routine and non-controversial, the chair should merely say, if there is no objection, and then state what's going to happen. If there's no objection, this motion is adopted. If there's no objection, the report will be filed. If there's no objection, whatever. But the important thing is don't go through a motion for everything. People are going to get very upset because you're wasting time.
That's right, which equals life, right?
Exactly.
And I think that this, you know, that this topic is one that every board has to deal with. We have agendas, we have minutes, and if we could really start using them properly, then we're going to make our meetings more efficient. But I really see them being a big stumbling block in lots of organizations. So I like this. If there is no objections, if you're out there listening to us right now, repeat this after Lorenzo. If there is no objections. So there doesn't have to be a big formal motion made to approve the minutes. It could be done by unanimous consent.
Exactly.
Is that correct?
Exactly, exactly.
Okay, so very important. So now that should take some pressure off the secretary. They don't have to move to approve the minutes. It's all in the chair's hand, and if there is no objections. Now,
exactly.
Let's ask the question, what if there is an objection?
Very good,
the chair
very good.
Says, if there's an objection, and I raise my hand and I say, my name was misquoted, I didn't say, or I, you know, my name was misspelled, or whatever I say, how does the chair then handle that?
Very good. If there is an editorial problem, for instance, somebody objects to a comma or a misspelling, they just point it out, the secretary takes care of it. That is not a reason to waste time. If, however, a fact is wrong or incomplete and someone does object when the chair says, if there is no objection, and someone does object, then we take this as if it were a regular motion.
There you
go. We go right into an amendment, we go into a debate, we take a vote. Or, after we listen to the objection, we say, if there's no objection, that correction will be included. And that, again, time saved.
There you go. A unanimous consent. We're saving that time. And I want to just pull the two distinctions out, that if it's an editorial comment, you don't need to go through the process of making an amendment. But if it is a factual comment that there's an error, then maybe you need to make the amendment.
But you could also always try unanimous consent after admitting he is right, we all agree, no objection, it's done.
Okay, very powerful. All right, so important as we're thinking about this, I think that this will save a lot of organizations some time if the chair can just embrace the fact that they can really use unanimous consent if there is no objection, and then keeping in mind the difference between editorial comments and changes and factual changes. So very powerful with respect to your insights. Now, another secretary wrote in, and she asked this question. She said, can the secretary send out the board minutes to the association before they are approved at the next board meeting or about 2 months later? So the association members would like to get the minutes sooner than that. Can she send a draft, quote-unquote draft minutes out?
Oh, definitely. Let's keep in mind, however, that you and I are speaking primarily of the deliberative organizations, the ones, you know, just the local, not a big deal. We're not going to cause any problems with wars in outside or states going to secede from the union. We're not going to do anything drastic. However, there are state statutes for certain types of organizations, as well as there's a corporate law. So we have to know in your organization, there's a Brown Act, in case you're in California. Does that apply? Are you a homeowner in California? Does the Davis-Sterling Act apply? In which case, how you send out the agenda is dictated by them. But let's say it's not. Let's say it's just a regular organization, like a ham radio operators organization. Well, they're the fun type, and all they have to do is, if they want to, they can send the agenda ahead of time, keeping in mind that everyone must realize that that document is for information only. The only official agenda is the one that is adopted by the members at the meeting.
There
so
you
it's
go.
Just information.
So it's just information until they get the meeting to the meeting and people start voting on it.
Exactly.
Okay, very powerful. So in a short answer to this individual's question would be, yes, you can send
yes.
out the minutes because they are a draft until they get voted on.
Exactly.
Okay, powerful. Now, I did want to spend some time on your handout with your minutes, do's, and don'ts, since we are talking about minutes right now.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you have 15 do's and 10 don'ts with respect to minutes, do's, and don'ts, and I just wanted to see if you could maybe highlight several of your do's and several of your top don'ts for us.
Very good. The top five, I think. Do use the agenda as a guide. That's critical. Do record who's presiding and who's taking minutes, because they're the only ones that are required to be at the meeting, actually.
Hmm.
Do write the full name of anyone who made a motion. It's critical to know where it came from, but after it's amended, he might hate the motion and vote against it, but that's another story.
Yes.
And you must also into the motion and all the amendments in the exact wording as stated by the presiding officer. That's critical. You have to enter it the way the presiding officer entered it, not the way the secretary heard it, not the way the last time it was pronounced. And also,
let's pause there for a
yes,
second, because
please,
I think that's
please.
A really, really powerful one. Can you repeat that again?
Sure. When a motion is made, quite often you'll have a very peaceful, likable presiding officer who does not like to interfere. Well, you need to get him to stop doing that, stop, knock it off, and be in charge, repeat the motion so that the secretary can write it down and so that everyone knows exactly what the wording is. That way they can amend it, and later on, if it is adopted, people will know exactly what it is. This is powerful in relation
so
to
powerful.
What gets done.
Well, and you know, and I have to tell you, I have sat in more meetings where the chair is chairing and people are saying, so moved, and they're not even really repeating motions. And I have to tell you, I feel sorry for the secretary. Because
oh,
I'm
does.
Sitting there thinking, they don't know what's being moved, and nobody in the room really knows what the motion is. And everybody's just kind of operating from a sense of they think they kind of know what they're kind of talking about. So I think this one is such an important one with respects to people have to state the motion specifically so that the secretary can write it down. And it's everybody's responsibility to repeat the motion. The person who's making the motion, the chair who's chairing the meeting, and for that secretary to make sure she or he can really get that down in the document. So powerful.
Definitely. Especially one other point is that next month's meeting, when they are going through the minutes, everyone is going to finally realize, that's not what I thought I voted for.
Yeah.
It was never repeated.
Because everyone just said, so move, so move, so
exactly.
move. So what other popular do's would you suggest with respect to our minutes?
Oh, here's another one that's very technical, but it's something that will save the association time and headaches. Show the exact action taken at every motion. Was it adopted? Was it defeated, postponed, referred? Because that then creates the next month's agenda. And the next item is, and probably one that no one does, is every time someone gives a notice, or every time there's a point of order, or every time there's an appeal, those three have got to be written in there, because they are critical in relation to what's going to happen next or why something didn't happen. So these last two things, last two points, are the type of things that will give you headaches, and a good secretary will keep up with these, and it's amazing what the result will be next month, all productive.
And let me ask you your opinion, because I know for me, I certainly empower my secretaries to have more of a direct relationship with their president. And if in the meeting the secretary gets lost, I encourage the secretary to raise their hand and say, point a parliamentary inquiry. And really, so the secretary is clear. What kind of suggestions do you give with respect to the working relationship between the secretary and the presiding officer?
The secretary is usually elected as, somebody who's quiet, who wants to participate but doesn't want to be very assertive, very aggressive, doesn't want to be noticed, hogwash. You need a secretary that's a gladiator, because anytime something goes on and the secretary is not sure what to write, she has got to have the power in her to say, stop. I don't know what that motion was. Repeat it. But she has to stop the precedent. If not, the historical record of what happened is lost. The secretary has got to be a gladiator.
Yeah, I love that term. That's so empowering and so bold, and I don't think that we typically think of the secretary like that. And I think that's such a revolutionary way of thinking about yourself if you are the secretary. You are a gladiator, and so it is about empowering your voice, being a little bit more assertive so that you know that you're writing the right things down. And I think that the president really needs to understand that they're on the same side. Everybody needs to get this together. So that's a great description, a gladiator.
Precisely.
How fun. Now, what if someone wants to make changes to the minute? You know what? I actually stopped. I didn't even let you get to your don'ts. We had such amazing do's, and I realized that. I'm going to pause myself because I want to make sure we get to our don'ts. What are some of the don'ts?
Okay, I've got at least four of the 10 okay. don'ts that I want to mention. And first of all is, do not forget to check the past minutes to find out what happened, so that when you're working on these next minutes, the current minutes, you have an idea of what must not be neglected. But the only way you can tell this is if you read the last minutes, because the minutes, just like the agenda, are an evolving document from 1 month to the next to the next. So you got to be careful with that. Another one is, do not include anything anybody says in debate or discussion. No opinions, no descriptions, no praise, no criticism. No matter how much this gladiator loves or hates the person who's discussing, don't include anything. It's got nothing to do with reality.
And I don't even know if you could say that strong enough, because people need to hear that. Don't include anybody's comments. That's not what the minutes are about. It's just not what the minutes are about. The minutes are really about recording the actions, right?
Exactly. This is not a court transcript. It's just a menu of things that happen in the current meeting.
Now, I have a question. I do get
this
quite a bit from clients when people say, well, I want to go on record as being opposed to this. It sounds like we're now in some kind of a court deposition, right?
But yes, exactly.
What does that mean?
In reality, in a meeting, there are only a few items, not more than half a dozen, that one person can demand that must be done. There are just a few of them. Everything else, you know, 99% of what happens, has got to be a result of the wish of the members. So if I want my vote or voice or opposition noted, I'm going to need to make sure that everybody in the hall, everyone, votes in favor of, you know, majority votes, so that my vote is listed. Otherwise, I need to sit down and stop being so pompous.
Mm-hmm. Say it. Sit down and stop being so pompous. And you hear this so often, and I just think that so creates this us versus them, me versus you, right versus wrong mentality that really gets us nowhere. And so I think it really is thinking about, well, why do you want to have your vote recognized? Or, you know, because that's, again, not the point of what we're trying to accomplish.
There are a few situations, for instance, if the members are elected as representatives of an area, like constituencies, almost like politicians, and they were required to vote in favor or against something, it may be important for them to go on record just to prove that they did perform their role and they're all right. Otherwise, somebody will accuse them, you didn't vote, you weren't there. So this could be an exception.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely an exception, because they are showing their association, that their constituents, that I'm following what it is that you've asked me to do. But I think many times when I hear that comment, it's just tied to someone's big old ego that they think is more important than the entire board. So, and again, I want to say that big old ego is wasting a lot of people's lives.
Does not realize or does not remember that the agenda in the meeting or the arena where the individual's rights collide with the rights of the entire association. And thank goodness Roberts does come out and say the rights of the association, when in conflict with the rights of the individual, will supersede the rights of the individual.
So powerful. I'm even just writing that down for my own personal note as you're saying it, because I think it's so important to realize that. And I think that's what's powerful about meetings. We've listed two don'ts. Are there any other don'ts that you want to highlight before we move on?
Well, I lumped three of them, debate, discussion, opinions, praise, criticism. I have them separate, but I lumped them into one big, don't listen to them.
That's it. So that's the do not include personal opinions or descriptive phrases, right? Is that what you're saying? Like
exactly.
He said or she said.
Exactly.
All right. Very fun. So I did have one more question here. It's what if someone wants to change the minutes after they've been approved?
Oh, yes. Well, as any motion, see, this is the beauty of Robert. Nothing in Robert is final.
Mm-hmm.
It always allows for the member or the association or anything in the environment to change, and then the member or the association can adapt to it. So let's say that someone either finds an error or realizes something was left out or whatever in the minutes 2 months or 2 years later. Not a problem. The person brings it up, explains it as a motion, and everyone either unanimous consent or they take a vote, a two-thirds vote, and then the minutes are corrected and updated, regardless of how old the minutes are.
Yes, yes. And so what I think that that says to me is, quite honestly, okay, everybody, take a deep breath. It feels like people are trying to go through the minutes with such a fine-tooth comb that they're looking for errors and they're looking for it to be wrong. And so it's that sense of, you know, look at the minutes. They are an important document, but what's really important is you got to get to the business of your meetings.
Exactly. You keep in mind that if your meeting lasts 1 hour and the minutes last more than 2 pages, and adopting them the next month lasts more than 20 minutes, there is something very wrong, and it's got nothing to do with parliamentary procedure.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to do with the practice. So
it
should be very quick.
Yes, yes. I mean, they should be, theoretically, it should take about a minute and a half, 2 minutes to approve, because theoretically people come into the meeting prepared, they've read the minutes. If there are any corrections that need to be made, it can be quickly stated, and then you move on.
Precisely, precisely.
Because where is it that we want to get is really we want to get to the business.
Exactly, exactly. That's why you called everybody together.
Yes, we want to get to the business. So that being said, we're going to kind of start our discussion a little bit on agendas, but I want us to answer this question because it feels like inevitably in meetings, people run out of time to get to business. So why don't we just start with business items?
Oh, that is such a great question. But I'll go back to Robert's. Robert is so logical, so methodical, so systematic. It's almost pretty. And the way it is set up for an agenda is the first thing you've got to do is put a closure on the last minutes. So that's the first thing you do. You approve those. Then, since we're going to need information to do business, let's listen to the officers and the committees, standing committees and ad hoc committees. Let's listen to their reports. We're probably going to use that information later. The next item is referred to as special orders. Well, these are the sort of actions that probably the bylaws require you to perform on this particular monthly meeting. For instance, nominations, elections, or amendments to the bylaws. They're required to be done. That means you got to get to them quickly because you may run out of time.
Mm-hmm.
After you take care of this, now you go to unfinished business. And unfinished business is any matter that was brought forward from a previous meeting because you didn't get to it because you were talking too much. You were wasting time on adopting the minutes. So you didn't get to the business. Well, now you have to get a closure, put a closure on that. Once you've taken care of all that, now you're ready to take care of today's new business. But there's no point going to new business when you still have this pileup of things that you didn't get around to. It's so logical, it's pretty.
Yes, it is. And I love the way that you're describing it. One of the things I want to highlight is that way back up there in information items that tend to happen at the beginning of the meeting that are at the top of the agenda after we've approved the minutes and then we go into like the officer reports, is you said that this is information that we're probably going to need in order to do business.
Exactly.
And I tell you, I don't think people think about this like that. I think people think that this is their opportunity to kind of just talk. I've got 2 minutes, so I'm going to tell you something for 2 minutes, or I've got 10 minutes. So I think if we can get people thinking in that frame of mind, it really will make the meetings more effective. That right now, as I'm speaking, I'm giving you information that will help us conduct our business better.
Exactly. Or what the chair could do is, right before the meeting, ask whoever's going to make a report, ask them directly the following question. Do you have anything new to say?
Mm.
Well, if he doesn't have anything new to say, all he's going to do is tell us what he's done. Nobody cares. Then he'll say no. Then the chair says, good, I don't need to call on you. Next. And move on.
I love that. Do you have anything new to say? I have an ebook on how to chair a meeting with confidence, and that's one of the things that I have written in there because it's such a great facilitation tool because it's not like you're telling that person to be quiet, but what you're encouraging them to do is to only speak up if they have something different and relevant to add. So very smart.
Exactly. most people should realize that this is exactly what a chair should be telling people when they're debating emotion.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing that you said about, like, people want to be able to be heard for the same thing. Well, when you go to the next person who's going to discuss, you can graciously, with a smile and such a pretty face, ask the person, do you have something different to share with us?
Yes. Yes.
And if they don't, you say, thank you so much, and you move on to the next one.
Yeah, and I really think a lot of those tips and techniques, we have another teleseminar coming up that is about how to chair a meeting with confidence, and I think that we're going to probably hear that brought up again, so very powerful as we think about
mm-hmm.
this. Now, I have a question.
Does
a motion have to be made by the board to adopt the agenda?
Motion to adopt the agenda, no. But first, let's say, in some situations, either because there's a bylaw or a special rule, it says the agenda has to be the following. In that case, you don't even have an opportunity to adopt it because it's already dictated. But the regular other associations, say, for instance, that going back to the ham radio operators, they have a meeting, and the agenda is before people. They will hear those five magic words again. If there is no objection, today's agenda is the one that's distributed. Wait a couple of seconds. Don't beg. Wait a couple of seconds and move on.
So if there are no objections, say it again.
The agenda before you is adopted.
Okay. If there are no objections, the agenda before you is adopted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think, again, it goes back to that unanimous consent. Everybody out there, say unanimous consent, right? Because we do want to save people's lives. And that process, I don't think, is utilized enough in meetings because it's not understood. So unanimous consent is used on those things that are, routine? Was that the word that you
routine
used?
Routine and non-controversial.
Yeah, routine and non-controversial. So very powerful. Unanimous consent. Now, this is an interesting one. Who is supposed to prepare the agenda?
Oh, that's a good one. And it's always a problem because the president believes that when he was anointed, that he was given the power to decide. And no, he's not. Probably the president is the one with the least rights because he's there to serve the assembly. So let's go back to the agenda. The agenda is put together by the three individuals that have the information to create a good, productive agenda. Number one would be the secretary. Without the secretary's notes, you don't know what was left pending or referred or postponed. You won't know any of that. And then comes the parliamentarian. Without the parliamentarian, you would know where does it go or is it in order to move it forward or did it already die? And then finally, the president, because the president was elected to accomplish certain goals, so he has a direction. She has a direction of where they need to go, but it's got to be supported by the secretary and the parliamentarian. So it's three people who create the agenda.
Mm-hmm. And I really love the way that you started that conversation by thinking the president feels like they have been anointed. You know, so in some weird way, it's that sense of we need to get back from believing that the president has all the power to really the president is about and rooted in service, and it is a collective effort on all of the parts. And it's interesting because I don't know if a lot of people make the connection between how closely related the agendas and the minutes are.
Exactly, yes.
And how those two documents really support each other.
Exactly. They're two sides of the same coin. You can't have one without the other. They have to be synchronized. One is responsible for the other. You cannot separate them.
Mm-hmm. You can't separate them. Now, this is an interesting question that someone wrote in. They said that typically our board, and I'm going to just real quickly pause. I think that this individual is talking about consent agenda and unanimous consent. So I think you need to do a little bit of describing here. So let me read the question, and then we can move forward. It says, typically our board chairperson includes, consent to agenda as a line item in the agenda. I believe this is an opportunity for members to agree to proceed with the meeting as planned to make amendments to the agenda. However, she simply uses this time to approve minutes from the last meeting rather than including approval of minutes in the agenda. Am I correct in my thinking, and how should I approach her about altering the agenda? So,
here again, most of the meetings are run based on what someone learns either from watching television or listening to rumors. And instead of that, we should just look at, for instance, Robert's Rules of Order in brief, tiny little book that is, it's just impossible to do without, or for that matter, quite a few other sources. For instance, my handouts on the on my website. And you will notice that there is a regular agenda, and one item in there could be listed somewhere before we get to listening to standing committees. Anywhere before then, there will be another item that says adopt consent agenda.
Okay.
So the adopt consent agenda means that either you have another piece of paper, or in there you list motions that are, again, routine and non-controversial. So if every month you're going to perform 20 actions, and 5 or 6 of them are so routine, nobody wants to waste time. Everyone agrees what you should do. You list them on there, and when you get to that consent agenda item, you say, if there is no objection, the consent agenda will be adopted. So everything in there has now received unanimous consent as approval. On the other hand, let's say we have one individual who is a little bit concerned about one of the items, maybe not informed enough to feel good about voting. All he has to do is, I object to item number 3, or I want item number 3 pulled. And so that item number 3 comes out of the consent agenda, and it is placed in the current agenda where it normally belongs. Either it's unfinished business or new business or wherever it goes. Mm-hmm. So we have two different agendas, a consent agenda for the 5 magic words, if there's no objection, and then the regular one that has more information that may lead to more debate, but that also could be the 5 magic words.
So
now,
consent,
I'm not sure the question is asking that.
And let me just ask, because it sounds like the chair in this particular situation is actually adding the minutes to the consent agenda. And would that be something that you would suggest that he or she does?
No, definitely not. Everyone has must have an opportunity to correct the minutes. It's very unlikely that you can just put it on the consent agenda without actually stopping and say, read it over. I want to make sure everyone agrees. It's not a good idea to put it in there because people are going to pull it out every single time. There's always someone who wants to correct something.
Yes.
So the minutes should not be in the consent agenda.
So hopefully everybody out there is kind of getting the different levels of what we're talking about. It's like, number one, I'm going to do a kind of a broad overview of what you're saying. Number one is that your minutes should always be its own area on the agenda, correct? Okay,
yes,
and then number two, I'm also hearing you describe what consent agenda is. And the consent agenda is really the approval of those non-controversial issues.
Exactly.
And now let's put that out there, that sometimes people can use the consent agenda as a manipulative technique. And if that's the intent in which you're using it for, shame on you.
They're not going to get away with it, because one individual is bound to say, I object to item
number
3.
That's right.
Or
that's
pull
right.
item number 3, unless you are hiding something and no one knows what it really means, and they are misled into thinking they're going to get ABC. In reality, they're going to get XYZ.
Yeah. So very important that you use the consent agenda for those things that are non-controversial. And then the last one that we keep talking about, and one that I really encourage boards to embrace and learn, is how to utilize unanimous consent.
Exactly.
Good and point. I'll tell you, it wasn't until I got into NAP, the National Association of Parliamentarians, and started going to CSAP, which is the California State Association of Parliamentarians, which is where we met, that I even heard of unanimous consent. So it was, it was something that I certainly learned by just being a part of the organization, and I see it being a really great tool that helps to save a lot of time.
Exactly.
And he asked a fundamental question, he or she, I'm not sure this is a male or female, but the last question I think is one that we should note. It says, how should I approach her, meaning the chairperson, about altering the agenda?
Well, the best way to alter an agenda is merely that at the point where you're going to vote on it, amend it.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, if you don't like the fact that item number 10 is towards the end, you could say, I move to amend by moving item number 10 between item number 3 and number 4.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if you've got your member's support, you go through the motion of seconding, debating, voting, or we merely use those five magic words. If there's no objection, we're going to move item number 10 to a place between item 2 and 3 and 4, and
mm-hmm.
it's done.
And it's
that
done.
That would be one thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because as you're talking right now, that's one of the things I've seen, you know, right along with minutes taking a whole lot of time to pass, the agenda takes an exceptional time to pass. And so who's responsible, A, you know, for, you know, because collectively you've got the president, the secretary, and the parliamentarian all putting the agenda together. So should there be that much controversy when it comes to the agenda when it's presented to the body?
No. There shouldn't be any controversy. The only difference would be, for instance, if you are allowing, say, 10 minutes for an item, and everybody wants to discuss it for 30.
Mm-hmm.
That's the sort of thing that people really get upset about. Or if
yeah.
you purposely put something at the very end when you know everyone wants to deal with it right now.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of controversy, but that's minor. Again, as a chair, you graciously respond by giving them a pretty smile and saying, thank you for that information. If there is no objection, we're going to move it. You've got to do that because you're serving them. You've got to.
Yes, because I have seen some meetings where it almost takes just as long to approve the minutes as it does to approve the agenda, and then you have barely any time to get to the business that's at hand, and you have a whole lot of frustrated people on the board. So when you go in and you do your interactive workshops and you've worked with your board and you know that they're in that place, what do you do to help elevate their thinking out of being caught in this rat race of spending so much time on minutes and agendas?
I try to point out the advantage of not wasting 20, 25 minutes on the minutes,
mm-hmm.
because if you do it right, again, I'm going back to my handouts, if you do it right, there's really nothing else for you to waste time on the minutes for. And
yeah.
without even knowing, you move right across. And before you know it, you've got so much time to complete unfinished business, to deal with new business. Everyone feels productive. They feel they've done something. They walk away relieved that something was accomplished thanks to the chair.
Yes. And I just took a deep breath, and it made me feel better as you were talking. I want to go into one other piece with respect to agendas is, you know, I don't know if organizations use their agenda enough as a facilitation tool. And I'm a big believer that some time elements on information items are a good thing. So, like, for example, if you look at the sample agenda that you have, that officer reports be limited to 2 minutes per officer. I'm just kind of making that up.
Yes.
But,
yes.
you know, what is your thought about how many time elements should be placed on the agenda?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point, because if you use too many time elements, and by that we mean you have the hour listed next to approval of minutes, and then next to officer reports, you add the hours again, and you keep a running list of how many minutes you do for each. That may sound like a good idea, but it really ties your hands, and it's not flexible enough to adapt to something that comes up that's really critical. So what most people recommend is that you put a time element only in those items that you know are critical. For instance, when you start and when you adjourn, definitely. But then perhaps on standing special orders, because the bylaw requires that you do the nomination or you the election, that would probably have another time element. So that you have, if you start at 1 o'clock, you got to get to the special orders by 1:20.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making this up, but you see what
mm-hmm.
I mean. And
mm-hmm.
then perhaps if it's not a very long one, you could say by 1:30, you need to start unfinished business or start new business if you know you don't have any unfinished business. And so you're actually segmenting the time span for your meetings rather than tying the hands of the members, because it just means they're just going to have to keep moving to suspend the rules so they can continue or adding more time. And by the end of the day, it didn't do any good except get everyone upset with parliamentary procedure.
There you go. Now, let me ask you, and I might be completely incorrect in this, but when I look at the agenda, I see two things. I see, is it an information item or is it a business item? And if it's a business item, then we really are tied to how Robert says we need to deal with that business item. But with respect to information items like officer reports, we as the president, the secretary, and the parliamentarian, we can put any amount of time limit we want on those reports, correct?
Yes, that's true. But let me go back to this idea, the dichotomy between information and action. If you were to be working under one of those open meeting statutes, where you, like the Brown Act, Davis-Stirling, mm-hmm. and any other in other states in the U.S., you would be required to post the fact that you're going to take action. You would be required to add it on the agenda, and if you don't do it, you cannot take action.
That's
a limiting factor. For the rest of us, going back to the Ham Operators Club, any information could lead to a motion. Let's say the treasurer says, we have $200 extra. Somebody says, oh, great, I move that we use this money to do the following. And no one knew about that until they heard the report. So even though the report is information only initially, it could lead to a motion.
Is that motion, just so that I'm, you know, so that we're kind of talking about, if like in the officer reports, an officer is talking about something that's going to be taking place or is going to eventually take place, can right there in the officer reports a motion be made or...
Yes. Uh-huh.
And that's only if you're not following any kind of the Brown Act or any other type of state.
Let's say we're not. And however, Roberts does not like for officers to make a report and then make a motion on the report. I'm not sure why, but I think I like it.
Yeah.
However, anyone off the floor, any other member, could hear the president's report, like the idea, and come up with their own idea. Or, and this is usually what happens, a good conniving chair will give a report and hand the motion before the meeting to a member so that someone makes the motion he wants to hear, but he's not allowed to make. That's what good conniving chairs will do.
Yeah.
But otherwise, any report can lead to a motion.
Yeah. And I like the idea that it's a good conniving. It's not a, you know, and it is in service of the assembly, you know. So important as we're looking at that. So real quickly, I'm just always amazed in these interviews how quickly the time melts away.
Yeah.
But I wanted to just kind of get to this last couple of questions here. Is it what information must be included and what is not required in both the agendas and the minutes? I mean, it's kind of a meaty question, but sometimes I think people are putting too much into these documents.
Well, I hate to say this again, but if you go to those handouts, you see a list. It's very descriptive. It's very long, and it's a lot better because you'll have it in writing rather than to hear us list them. So let me refer folks to those handouts, please.
Yes, and those handouts are at your website, which is roberts-rules.com. Again, that's roberts-rules.com. And on the left-hand side of the navigation, you'll see some Master Your Meeting handouts. You just click right on that, and then you'll be able to download those four amazing handouts right in front of you, the agenda sample, the minutes, do's and don'ts, the sample minutes, as well as that agenda chart. And I really appreciate you putting all of that information together for us.
My pleasure.
Very important, Lorenzo. I really appreciate it. Now, we'll end with this very simple question. Must the minutes be signed and dated by the secretary, and must the minutes be recorded in a bound book?
Oh, good point. I get that a lot. The secretary is supposed to sign them and not say respectfully submitted, because that's considered it's just an old way of doing things, and Roberts prefers not to. We would have to argue with him why he does that. His grandson could probably tell us. But anyway, that's preferred not to, because it's an old way of doing things. That's one thing. The other thing is that the president could, if the president wants to be pushy, also sign it, but it's not necessary. Where the minutes go. Roberts merely says that the minutes should go in a substantial book or binder. So then that means that every organization has their own idea, their own custom, that's what substantial means, and then they have to figure out, well, what am I going to do with the attachments? What if the glue that I'm using starts to smear the letters? What if the pages pull out? So that everything has advantages and disadvantages. As long as it's substantial or binder, you're fine.
Very important, very important. And I tell you, I really appreciate your insights. I mean, we talked a lot about unanimous consent today, if there is no objections, and how to really help save the lives of those individuals out there, that our minutes and our agendas should be a tool to help us have more powerful meetings. They shouldn't be a stumbling block that's adding time to our meetings. So I do want to thank you for sharing your expertise with us today, Lorenzo. You've been amazing. Thank you.
Thank you for including me. I'm so pleased. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, before we go, I do want to remind you all that this interview will be available for you to listen to for absolutely free for the next 48 hours at the Master Your Meetings Teleseminar events page. We will be sending you out a short follow-up email with a direct link to that events page for you to access, and that will be available at the end of the day today. Now, the events page, as you know, is the page where you get all your call-in information as well as the product details about the Master Your Meeting Success Kit. You please make sure that you check this page out, as it really is the only place that you can purchase the Success Kit for 50% off. And this offer is only good until the end of the teleseminar series, so that is a limited time offer. The kit includes all MP3 recordings for each of these powerful interviews, and having this information at your disposal really is a great tool so that you can refer back to it as often as you need, as well as share it with other board members who might benefit from it. I encourage you to take advantage of this discounted opportunity and buy the Master Your Meeting Success Kit today. Also, I do want to remind you that we'd love to have you visit robertsrulesmadesimple.com to learn more about the Robert's Rules Made Simple solution. If you need a simple and easy, fast, and affordable way to teach your board members Robert's Rules of Order, visit robertsrulesmadesimple.com today. We are about done, and as we close, I want to thank you for really staying on the lines with us. I appreciate your energy and your participation. You are a crucial part of the success of the teleseminar series, and we thank you. I'd like to encourage you to join us next week as we talk about board transitions and new members, how to keep the momentum with Mr. Scott Burns, PRP. In closing, again, I do want to thank our guest today, Mr. Lorenzo Cuesta, PRP. Again, if you'd like to learn more about him, you can visit him and also get those handouts at his website at www.roberts-rules.com. That's roberts-rules.com. I've enjoyed our time today, and I sincerely look forward to the difference we're going to make next week. Again, my name is Susan Leahy from robertsrulesmadesimple.com. Goodbye, and happy meetings.